Welcome to Inside the Spec. We are the podcast that bridges the gap between building product manufacturers and the architects who specify them. Each episode brings you unfiltered insights into how architects find, evaluate, and specify building materials. I'm your co-host, Megan Kavinsky, and CEO of Point to Point. We're an advertising agency focused in securing the architect's spec through results-focused marketing. And I'm joined by my co-host, Vardhan Mehta, a second-gen architect and founder of AceLab. AceLab is an AI-driven product selection platform that brings architects and manufacturers together early in the design process.
Whether you're a manufacturer looking to better serve the architectural community or a supplier seeking to understand the evolving needs of design professionals, Inside the Spec delivers actionable intelligence straight from the source. Inside the Spec, because understanding how architects think is the first step to becoming the architect standard.
Hello, and welcome to Inside the Spec. I am your co-host, Megan Kavinsky, CEO of Point to Point. And as always, I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, Vardhan Mehta, CEO of AceLab. And today, we are here with Laurel Hunzinski. Laurel is the VP of Engagement for Mindful Materials, and she is here to talk to us about the Common Materials Framework. She is their VP of Engagement, and so her role is really to get building product manufacturers and architects better understanding what is the Common Materials Framework and how do I engage with it? So that's what we're going to be talking about today. So Laurel, thrilled to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So before we get into the Common Materials Framework, which we will probably call CMF moving forward in the interest of time, can you first tell us what is Mindful Materials? What is the organization that you are a part of?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mindful Materials is a small but mighty building industry nonprofit. Our mission is to inspire, motivate, and empower everyone to choose materials that prioritize health holistically. And we have a vision of a materials economy that respects and protects the health of all people, communities, and ecosystems. And we also have no illusions that this is not something that we, our small nonprofit, or even a small dedicated group of partners is going to achieve on their own. It's really going to take critical mass across the industry to get behind that. And we all need to get aligned to make that be successful. So our role, Mindful Materials' role, is really the convener and facilitator of that industry alignment to get towards that vision. You can think of us as the UN of sustainable materials. We bring together all the different stakeholders from manufacturers to certifying bodies to architects and interior designers and specifiers to owners and procurement teams to all the way to the green building rating systems themselves. So we really are kind of the central unifying force that's working to move the industry towards this more regenerative future for building materials.
Sounds wonderful. Where are we in this journey? Where
Well, I would say we've been on it for a little while, but we still have a ways to go.
Well, what are, I mean, more so, what are your most immediate priorities? You know, what are the things that are top of mind for the moment that we're in right now? Better question.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the Common Materials Framework in your intro. That is a really big key focus for us at Mindful Materials right now. So the last couple of years, we developed the Common Materials Framework. We got it out there. I'm hopeful that your listeners have at least like heard some rumblings about this, if not like more intimately familiar with it. But we've been spending the last few years really getting out into the industry and explaining what is the Common Materials Framework? What is the value of it? What does it bring to all the different stakeholders in the industry? And how do we advance adoption of it? And we've gotten a lot of traction with that. So if you look at like LEED V5 at their building product credits, you'll directly see the same structure of the Common Materials Framework, which I'll explain a little bit more about. Don't worry. But now that we've got it out there and are getting more and more adoption of it, we really needed to take a step back and create some really clear tools and resources for all the different stakeholders, again, across the building industry, to let them know how they can engage with it, how can they get behind and align towards this broader movement. And so that's been our real focus this year. We have been co-creating with our forum partners of which ACE Lab is a member, to develop a bunch of these resources and this really robust toolkit that we're going to be releasing at Green Build this year. So just a couple of months from the time of this recording. And our real focus at this point in the journey is continuing to get widespread adoption of that common materials framework, but also to really get a connected data ecosystem powering behind it.
Whoa, lots to unpack there, girlfriend. All right, so let's start with question number one. What is the Common Materials Framework?
So the Common Materials Framework is a common language for sustainable building materials, if you will. So it's really rooted in the five impact areas of the AIA Materials Pledge, if your listeners are familiar with that. If not, I'll just give some brief context. The pledge was created in 2019 by the AIA's Materials Knowledge Working Group. There are so many titles and acronyms in this conversation. We're going to need a glossary. So the Materials Knowledge Working Group created and developed this pledge, which was introduced to the industry in 2019. And today we have, I think, over 300 firms that have signed on to this pledge. Some of the anywhere from the largest firms in the world to, you know, sole practitioners. But essentially what the pledge says is that we want to evaluate product impacts on not only the occupants, but like the whole life cycle impacts of products. And we want to look at that holistically. And so there's five impact areas of this pledge, which are human health, climate health, ecosystem health, social health and equity, and a circular economy. And so this pledge came out again in 2019, and all these firms started signing on, but it was really kind of aspirational at the time. It just says we're going to prioritize materials that provide disclosures and, you know, tell us how they're impacting and ideally reduce their impact on these five impact areas. But every firm, you know, was coming up with their own interpretation of what does it mean to reduce impacts on human health? And like, what am I going to require to demonstrate that this product is reducing impacts on human health? And there's five impact areas. So like, it was kind of the Wild West in like how firms were really implementing this into their workflow practice and like what they were asking for from manufacturers. And so Mindful Materials, having at this point, having developed an aggregated database of product sustainability data, having been, you know, spent a number of years kind of becoming recognized in this like sector, what we did at that point was to really pull together a group of subject matter experts who were representative of the folks who designed the AIA Materials Pledge and the firms who were implementing this into practice and like owners who were already establishing materials requirements, to really go through and say, how do we all get on the same page about how we're going to interpret these five things? And so what they did was essentially over a 6-month period, they read through all of the major certifications that are referenced in LEED and WELL, Living Building Challenge, in all the North American rating systems, and within their own programs, like what were they including or requiring, and basically took those certifications that we're already referencing in the market and kind of mapped them to these five impact areas. So, and then we shared that far and wide with the certifications and eco labels referenced, with the green building rating systems, really with the whole industry, and revised based on feedback, and ultimately issued this kind of initial common materials framework subset of data. The framework itself is massive. There's over 600 different data points that are referenced, but that's like way too overwhelming for us to try to introduce to the industry. So we took a first pass at like whittling that down. And that's what you're, you know, what you see today when you hear about the Common Materials Framework. But ultimately, it's based in certifications that exist in North America that are already referenced, and it ties those certifications back to impact that the materials have. So the beauty of it is, you know, firms don't have to have someone who's like a materials expert doing deep vetting. They can just say, hey, I'm interested in this type of impact. These are the certifications that are going to demonstrate that.
Yeah. And as an architect, I can attest to the fact that for CMF, it's had a very meaningful impact both on like the topmost experts in the industry with sustainability and junior entry-level architects that actually don't know where to start. So it's almost like a pass into what you need to know in order to improve your decision-making at your firm or on a project level. But Laurel, now maybe to switch gears on the other side of the market, let's say I'm learning about, so far, you know, I'm a sales marketing or product executive at a building product manufacturer, and I'm learning for the first time about mindful and CMS. How should I be thinking about it for my organization based on everything you've described so far, the use case for the demand side of the industry, so to speak, let's say the architects, owners, and the contractors?
So I like that you kind of describe this as like it gives a path for everyone. And something that I would share about the framework itself, you know, it's hierarchical. So there's the five impact areas that I mentioned, but within that, there's 18 different sub impact areas or sub buckets. And those address not only product impacts, but also the company itself, like the company's, you know, workforce practices and policies and the waste that they generate during operation, right? Not just for the products themselves. And then within that, within every one of those sub impact areas is this kind of spectrum that we refer to as the taco spectrum. And so I share this and I can unpack that a little bit more. I'm happy to. I don't want to lose the question here. But ultimately, the framework can be used as kind of a bit of a roadmap for manufacturers. And as they're developing their products, as they're considering where to invest when it comes to the myriad certifications that are available out there to choose from, understanding which certifications demonstrate the values that you have and which certifications are going to maybe be multi-attribute and allow you to communicate your impact across multiple areas as opposed to in just one.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful. Maybe, you know, also talk a little bit about the business case. So say I'm one of these executives, I'm sold, but now I need to make the case with the rest of the folks at the company I work for. What would be a good way for suppliers, manufacturers who are not embedded in this ecosystem or are learning a lot about the value of sustainability and how they can land projects? How should they be thinking about it?
Mm-hmm. Ordan, are you asking from an architect perspective or from a building product manufacturer perspective?
Manufacturers.
If I'm lead of product development at a building product manufacturer, question one is, I need to sell my executives on my next idea for a sustainable product and the R&D and all of the things that take to bring it to market. So how can I use the common materials framework to A, explain like why this product is needed and what it will fill and what it will do. And two, this is not going to be a product that doesn't sell, right? That this is something that would actually commercialize better than mm-hmm. other attempts have been in the past.
No one's ever asked me this question. I really love that, like in terms of like designing a new product.
Yeah. That's super exciting. You know, I want to be able to rationalize like, look at all these things it's going to be able to do against the five different buckets of the common materials framework. I know my CEO is also going to say to me, but we've tried sustainable products or the ones that we have right now. What they're really doing is they're elevating our like value-added intermediate products that have some sustainable properties, but aren't as, you know, like top tier from a sustainability mm-hmm. perspective. So what is this? You know, but because I know part of the common materials framework is really to help accelerate the adoption of sustainable materials, like, you know, absent policy and regulation in the U.S. that's going to drive it. If there's some other framework or decision making process that people can go through that applies logic, right, mm-hmm. it's going to make it easier to sort through the options that are out there and understand, you know, what the right solution might be. Right. That's a part of why you guys did this, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is perhaps a good like reflection back to the taco that I was mentioning earlier. So this spectrum that applies within all of the sub buckets of the common materials framework is TACO, which stands for transparency, assessment, commitment, and optimization. And I'm thrilled about you asking this question because like this is the dream to me personally as an architect and, you know, just with my history with mindful materials that like at the beginning you would start by thinking about this, right? And it's the, you know, like from the circularity perspective, design with the end in mind. What is the end of life pathway for that product? Like you could literally pick every one of those sub buckets and say, human health substances, what I want to shoot for is, because typically we're starting with an existing product. You have a product and now you're being asked for documentation. Now you need to get the information about that. And you're starting in that point at the transparency level. You're understanding what's in the product. How was it made? How are the supply chain, you know, how much supply chain transparency do you have? What's the carbon footprint? What's the life cycle assessment telling us? And how do we reduce that overall carbon footprint throughout the production, right? If you're starting like before you've even designed a product, right, being able to say, I want to shoot for optimization everywhere that I can, right? So when you look at, because again, typically you're starting with transparency and then you're trying to move towards optimization in all of these areas. So if you were starting trying to say, we want to be optimized, you could use the framework to kind of look and say, okay, what does optimized look like? When we're talking about substances and how they impact human health. Well, it's red list free. So you want to make sure that you're looking at all the chemicals in that product and you're not using any chemicals of concern in the production of that product, right? And so, yeah, there's one of the tools that we released earlier this year that we're going to be updating for this toolkit in a couple of months is just this interactive graphic that lets you kind of navigate through the framework and the different levels of it and see what certifications are relevant in those different areas. And what are the, you know, beyond that taco level, then we get into the really like technical data stuff. And I don't know how deep in the weeds, you know, your audience is going to be, and I don't want to lose people, but if there's specific data points, like if designers are asking for EPDs, that's one thing. They want to understand, you know, they want to have products that have an EPD. But now we're getting to the point where when we're talking about embodied carbon, the market has matured to the point that enough people have EPDs that we can actually develop a baseline average for a given product category of what is the global warming potential of XYZ product category based on the whole market. And the future vision is that we can actually get to that level of benchmarking and understanding for product categories in other impact areas too. So, you know, again, I don't know if your listeners are being asked for EPDs or if they're being asked for GWP, which is a jump in the level of complexity that, and, you know, data granularity that designers or specifiers are asking for in that case.
I would say for the most part, EPDs, HPDs, mm-hmm. Completely transparent. I have no idea what a GWP is. What is a GWP?
Well, this is a safe place, right? My favorite dad joke is when we get into the conversations around EPD, HPD, GWP, all these TLAs, three-letter acronyms.
Yeah.
It's just another of those. I will say, because you're certainly not alone, just a quick, you know, definition, yeah. GWP is global warming potential. So mm-hmm. when you do a LCA, yet another yeah. there, when you do a life cycle assessment for your product to get an EPD or environmental product declaration, that's one of the metrics that's going to be provided in that report is like, what is the global warming potential of your product? And that's usually used as a corollary for when we talk about the carbon footprint, that embodied carbon metric is the GWP.
Yeah. Laura, maybe talk a little bit about the impact, you know, in numbers or certain figures that Mindful Materials and the CMF have to date. And I'm asking this also because sometimes, you know, with there being over 1,500 certifications that architecture firms, owners, etc., maybe even more, have to keep track of, and this world being so like rapidly evolving, for manufacturers it might be a challenge if they're not already plugged in to understand the impact of investing in this space. But like, you know, regardless of in investing through their R&D or through their sales, marketing, operations processes. So maybe talk a little bit like to the impact, and you know, if you even want to mention some of the organizations in the industry, architecture firms, owners who are adopting this, so that all the listeners like truly understand why it's a big deal and why they should be thinking about this.
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for this kind of sparked a partial answer I didn't work in earlier. So I'll do a shameless name drop. So a great example also of like why, how can you show the ROI and like where are we seeing the ROI for this? So I talk with manufacturers every week who, you know, are just learning about the Common Materials Framework or just learning about mindful materials. And I talked with someone recently and they said, yeah, this Gensler product standards got launched and all of a sudden, you know, this went right up the chain to our executives. And they said, do we have this? Do we have these things that they're asking for? And if not, like, we got to get them right now. And, you know, if you haven't looked into it, you can't just get an EPD right now. It takes time and it's an investment, right? And depending on the product category, it could be a really big one. And so Gensler is one of, if not the largest architecture firm in the world. And they have now said across, you know, a dozen plus different product categories, if you don't have this transparency documentation, and in many cases, it's more than transparency, it's optimization. They are naming specific global warming potential limits that your product has to be at or below if it's going to be specified on their projects. And so, you know, I think that we're seeing more and more adoption, and the fact that Gensler has come out and said, hey, I mean, they didn't just do this lightly. They put in a ton of research to understand that, you know, what they were requiring was going to actually be like possible to get. So if they can require that as their baseline, then the rest of the industry can, and they've published it, you know, for everyone to see and use. And so the rest of the industry can basically say, hey, we require the same baseline that Gensler does. And the nice thing that they've done, and you spoke to this, Megan, the intention here isn't just to, you know, add more reporting and, you know, like get reporting on where we are, it's to move us forward. And Gensler has included what they call market differentiators. And so this is like the O in the taco, right? Moving towards optimization, they have said like, hey, if your product meets these differentiators, then that's going to be on our radar. You're going to be more likely to get specified. And this is where we want to see the market going. And that's really what's wonderful about the Common Materials Framework is it kind of puts a stake in the ground of like, here's where we are. And here's where the industry leaders, Gensler included, and they are a part of our forums, and they reference the CMF in, you know, in their Gensler product sustainability standards page. This is what the market wants to see. And this is the factors that are included and are shared within the Common Materials Framework. The industry leading firms and owners are already asking for this data, are going to want to see it within the next 3 years.
So that's fascinating, you know, because they are really having everyone raise the bar, right? You know, and it's wonderful to see a leader like that do this, because everyone is going to be emulating, you know, it's the way that a lot of architecture design, you know, just sort of naturally cascades. You see the leading firms do something and others are, you know, quickly following. One of the things that you and I talked about when we met before was the change in the model for how mindful materials makes this information accessible, right? Like you used to really host the database yourself and have more engagement on your platform directly. Now you're working through technology providers that were already hosting product data. Instead of like creating a new solution, you decided to work with platforms that were already out there. Talk about why you made that pivot and what that means for architects and manufacturers' ability to go out there and really be hands-on. Because if I'm learning about this, if I'm a building product manufacturer and I'm learning about this, the first thing I'm thinking about is where, if I don't know already, where am I? And if I don't know, I'm going to go and do research right away on where are my competitors? Are they here ahead of me? And how can I tell? So how could I be using some tooling out there to do something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So to the part about, you know, our transition over the years. So Mindful Materials, as I mentioned earlier, was like the first kind of curated, aggregated database with products that had sustainability criteria. And that at the time it was hosted by Origin. We've been very lucky to have some wonderful tech partners who've helped, like, you know, we're not a tech company. I mentioned we're a very small but mighty nonprofit. Our background is not in tech. And what's beautiful about getting the data about product impacts like this is then putting it into action. And all, you know, now today we see we've gone from us hosting a centralized database to seeing data being available in workflow tools more and more. And each tool has its own features and kind of benefits and purpose and unique workflow. And what's, again, beautiful about having this data is being able to take action with it. And so I think, again, us not being a tech company, we are really focused on getting the data, getting quality data, and getting that data connected so that it's in front of people whenever they are making materials decisions. And that goes back to the beauty of the original Mindful Materials label. You're standing in your materials library and you're looking around and you're like, which flooring should I pick? Well, this one has a label that tells me it meets these criteria, right? So analog or digital, the framework is, you know, a really meaningful and helpful tool to simplify that complexity. But on the digital side, our goal is not to be a tech platform. And our goal is not for products to be, quote unquote, on Mindful Materials. Our goal is for the product, for building product manufacturers to tell their sustainability story using this common framework and this common language. And wherever they want to do that, we want to empower them to do that. And so we're continuing to expand our tech partnerships. And I would love, you know, for Vardhan to talk about how ACE Lab is incorporating the common materials framework. But ultimately for us, you know, again, it's not about being on Mindful Materials platform. We are really more about the network. And again, that UN of sustainable materials, like I mentioned earlier, we're the facilitator, the convener, we're bringing the network of like-minded people together to advance this work. And we are expanding our tech partners to bring in more of the folks who can get that data in front of specifiers and help drive that demand signal. And we're excited to kind of be in this new phase of our evolution.
So, you know, I think for us, like thinking about the CMF and why it makes so much sense to integrate that into ACE Lab was a no-brainer. Very simply because I think the core challenge in our industry, especially on the demand side, architects, owners, and the contractors, is let's assume that everybody generally has very good intentions, but the disconnect is with the daily project headaches you experience. And so the opportunity we saw in the market is it's not enough to be a sustainability platform. But what if we took CMF, the framework and the thought leadership it represents, and we put sustainability on the same screen as the other important data points used to drive a decision by a project team, like the aesthetics, the design options, the cost, availability, testing reports, durability, installation. And then the value of that is now for a firm, they can use CMF as a filter, but at the same time, they have all the other data points that they need to actually make a decision. So, you know, the way I think about this is like the CMF is the path. It's like the highway. And then ACE Lab is the vehicle, the infrastructure for an architecture firm, an owner, a contractor to action on that data and to realize CMF in their workflows. Because, you know, at the end of the day, in this industry, you need both. You need people who are really focused on framework and what's the path to make a decision. And then you need folks like ACE Lab, where our focus entirely is now at this point, we've integrated CMF. We've filtered down CMF for over 150,000 products in the platform. And that's a really big deal. Like if you think about, you know, the example with Gensler. By the way, even though they invested a lot in GPS at first, right now their challenge, as it is for any other architecture firm, is having to find the data first themselves and to manage it and to keep it up to date. Mm-hmm. Just because the data we're talking about from manufacturers on a product level is not static. It changes all the time. And that's a really big lift. Like if you just think back to what is the business of architecture, it's to bill by the hour. So time is money. And this is not really the time that you can bill on a project that you're investing into for the good intentions you have. And I think that is the responsibility of ACE Lab for both the industry and to CMF to help accelerate the movement.
So if I go on ACE Lab and I search for cladding, I don't know, something, you know, I'm going to see the options listed by those that meet all five criteria of the CMF. Like explain more deeply what that means. Am I filtering by which pillar, you know, circularity, or how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so we've tagged based on the certifications identified by the CMF for each of the five areas. We show that tag for the relevant area. And so it could be human health or it could be climate health, right? And then we say that we've aggregated information for these 150,000 products, and the specific one you're looking at happens to meet 3 out of 5 areas. And then when you scroll down on AceLab, then you can actually see the documents and the testing reports that are recorded on AceLab, which you can use to evaluate the product more. But zooming out, let's talk about two user journeys. Let's assume first it's some sustainability expert at an architecture firm. They already know the CMF. So they just need a really efficient way to gather up all the information for their project teams to use on a daily basis. And so for them, it's really easy. They already know the CMF. They understand what are the testing requirements and certifications that, for each of the 5 areas they represent, and then they can search through that. But on the other side, for the more junior folks in the industry, they're also using AceLab as an educational tool to bring them up to speed on CMF. And so as they're searching, we show them an option to learn about CMF and to understand it a little bit more. And we essentially redirect them to the CMF website and the toolkit. And I think that's really important so that we're not relying on the people who are already utilizing CMF or at the very least thinking about it to drive the change in the industry. At the end of the day, Gensler is only one firm. This is only meaningful if, a big fraction of even just the architecture firms across the U.S. are thinking about this and being very intentional in how they make decisions.
Yeah. There's just one thing that I wanted to kind of hone in on, and that is the time is money thing. And this is the case for not only architects who, don't have the time to go wade through all of those documents. Sometimes on an EPD, you don't get to that GWP until page 6. And so it's like, how do we extract the most important data that's needed and make that available and accessible? And something that we, and again, I am fully aware that manufacturers listening to this are anywhere on the spectrum of this journey. Like many of you probably haven't, are just hearing about EPDs and HPDs. And so we surveyed our manufacturer community a couple years ago as we were building out this initial CMF, like first factors we focused on. And just to understand, especially as we get into trying to understand the data ecosystem and how this all flows behind the scenes, we had some manufacturers who had up to 4 full-time employees whose job it was to respond to requests from designers at Gensler and at all these other firms asking for their EPDs or other documentation, right? And so part of what, and it, this goes back to your question, Megan, of like, why did we move from being, a database to this, kind of more centralized role, is because we don't have any illusion that we're going to be the one place that everyone's going to go. Again, everyone's going to want to drive in a different vehicle, to use the analogy that Vardhan, created earlier, but we need to be on the same road and on the same path together. And so we're focused on, how do we get that same consistent data? And now part of our focus with addressing the data ecosystem is to say, and Vardhan talked about how they've collected and aggregated this data for products. How do we make sure that that data is, again, quality and consistent, and how do we streamline the process of that data management for manufacturers so that they're not all having to go investigate, well, we have, half a dozen different tools we could use. And like, we want the data, they have to provide it to the certifying bodies to get the certification in the first place. So let's take it from there and get it in front of people, right? And not have the manufacturer having to be the middleman in managing their data. And so that has been, I would say, an interesting shift of Mindful Materials' role in recent years where, again, we're not tech people and we don't want to manage the database, but we want to make sure that there is, we're getting rid of this friction that's happening on both ends, right? Because you're losing time. The manufacturer is losing time managing and kicking around this data back and forth. The designers are losing time reviewing this information and finding outdated information in different places on the internet. Like, how do we streamline this so that we see an ROI for everyone up and down the value chain?
So I think what you're doing is you are a data provider and that you're maintaining the standards across product categories, you know, at 600 different data points? No?
We are essentially giving structure to those data points and clarifying, like, yeah, but the data points live within the certifying bodies or the manufacturer
themselves. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. That you're aggregating that and then you're passing it to platforms like AceLab for them to apply where they already lived, you know, where there was so much information about the product listings and the all the way down to the, you know, the BIM and the three parts, you know, like, and so you can get like a full solution in one area, right?
There's a couple different angles and approaches. And the one you just described, we would love to do and would require some really significant funding. And so what our focus is on right now is, and we're working with, for those who are deep in the embodied carbon space, you might have heard of the ECHO project, embodied carbon harmonization or effort or organization, that essentially, how do we make sure that the data is structured in a consistent way when it leaves point A to when it gets to point B? And so we're working with collaborators to develop a data schema that will allow, without a central database that needs to be maintained, allow for translation between these different tools. And so what that ultimately looks like is the ability to respond to these questions and show how your product aligns with the CMF once, and then give that one answer that you gave to any organization that has any materials program, whether it's GPS or HOK is materials initiative or Perkins and Will, like any firm that has a materials program is going to be built on these same underlying data points. So if you can provide that data in the structure of the CMF, then you can answer all of those questions in one fell swoop, essentially.
Amazing. So feels like a natural question, shameless plug for Mindful Materials. You've taken on a very serious, you know, very aspirational mission, and there are ways for manufacturers and architecture firms to help engage and support the organization, right? Talk about what that looks like and how people can become a part of what you guys are building.
Yeah, thank you, Megan. I would love to. So we've kind of talked about the CMF itself having different levels of complexity and depth. And we understand that there is this kind of spectrum across the market of like where folks are on their sustainability journeys. So if you're someone who is, you know, just starting out, you need some guidance, you want to, you know, connect with other peers, understand like the latest of where the industry is going, get more familiarized with the common materials framework, you know, align your brand and align yourself with this kind of holistic roadmap, membership is a great pathway. And we have monthly engagement group meetings for our manufacturer members. We had Wes Sullins from USGBC presenting on Lead B5 before it went public. Like, we give a lot of opportunities for kind of early insights to what's happening in the realm of material transparency. Now, if you're someone who is like, I have EPDs for all my products, I'm like moving on to the optimization side, then we'd love to talk to you about engaging with the forums. So the forums are, I refer to these as kind of like the deepest level of engagement and the greatest level of investment in Mindful Materials. And so if you want to be at the table and guiding the future of the Common Materials Framework and helping to co-create resources, you know, we talked earlier, you mentioned, Megan, about this is how the industry moves. You have the industry leaders and they set the pace, and then the rest of the industry is trying to follow that. And so if you feel like you're one of those industry leaders, then our forums are the place for you. And so our website has more information in the Support Us page about the different membership tiers and forum membership. And I would love to direct people there. And then we also, you know, this year we've really been kind of heads down with developing this toolkit that I mentioned that's coming out at Greenbuild. But next year, we're going to be back out kind of evangelizing and getting out in the market and kind of connecting with people through regional events. This is something that we've done for many years now, is our regional pop-up series. So it's kind of been a combination of like a product showcase where you can, you know, see how products are demonstrating their alignment with the CMF, education. So we have a CEU presentation about the CMF, and then just a networking kind of happy hour. I would say that the Mindful Materials network and just kind of plugging in with like-minded individuals and professionals who are kind of working towards this common goal and really are truly so collaborative and so, you know, just really leading the pack in what they're doing and how they're implementing it and talking about it all throughout the way. So I feel like the network is really the best piece of Mindful Materials, but I'm obviously biased because that's really where my role lies. But yeah, we have a wonderful, vibrant community of folks on in all different roles throughout the built environment, and would love to welcome all of your listeners to join. And of course, to come to our happy hour. Yes, yeah, I'll let you get the plug for that.
Well, I'm going to give you a double whammy, though. All right. Best question. So I'm going to ask two in one. Why don't we talk about exactly green build and what talk about the toolkit? What can you tell us about the toolkit? And then what can you talk about how people can engage in the community, both, you know, at the show and then at the happy hour?
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Mindful Materials always has a huge presence at Green Build. This is like the biggest show. I mean, it's the biggest green building industry event of the year. We always have some major updates to share with the industry at Green Build. And this year, it is that toolkit that we mentioned. So the toolkit is going to have really everything that you could possibly need to implement the CMF in your work. For manufacturers, it's going to have data management, guidance, and best practices, how to talk about how your products are aligning with the CMF in your marketing. It's also going to have a toolkit for, and this is a great, you know, talking about ROI and like where's the market going. It's also going to have guidance for firms that don't have a materials program like Gensler to create one using the CMF. And so I suspect we're going to see a lot more firms aligning with this. And we're also seeing our rating systems aligning with this. So one of the things that Mindful Materials does at Green Build is curate a series of education sessions. And so I'll share with you, and these are on the expo floor. So you don't have to have a full conference pass. You can just have an expo pass and come learn about the latest with Mindful Materials right there on the show floor. So we have one session that's going to feature USGBC, IWBI, ILFI, and AIA, all talking about how they're aligning with the Common Materials Framework. And we're going to be sharing a little bit about our expansion outside of North America in 2026 and beyond, which we're super excited about. We will have some of our forum members from Boulder Associates, Gensler, LPA, talking about the power of a common ask to really influence the market. And they're going to be sharing some case studies. So the toolkit's also going to be chock full of case studies of how materials programs are referencing the CMF and how manufacturers and their products are referencing their alignment with the CMF. We have another session on data. And for those who are really, you know, we're really getting excited and enticed by that part of the conversation today, that'll be a great session for you to tune into. We have a couple sessions that are going to cover like how data actually gets from the certification into driving decisions. So that's going to be a really helpful one when we're talking about the ROI. And then really focusing on the role of nonprofits and industry collaboration to advance the market. And so there we're going to be joined by Wendy Vittori from Health Product Declaration Collaborative, so HPD, Lindsay Baker from ILFI, they do the Declare label, Don Davies from Building Transparency, so EC3 tool, and then Annie Bevan, our president in Mindful Materials role. So really looking at what are some of the industry nonprofits that are really driving in this space, and what's the importance of this kind of radical collaboration to make change in the industry. So we'll have those education sessions. And then on Wednesday night, we have our big happy hour. So this is usually outside of the like crazy Green Build after party. This is, I would say, the top event, shoulder event for Green Build if you're visiting. It is on Wednesday evening at Prank Bar from 6 to 8 p.m. So we would love to see you there. And we will include, I'm sure, in the show notes or in the description here, the link to register.
Absolutely. And Point to Point and Ace Lab will be there too. So
absolutely.
Well, thanks, Laurel. That was informative. That was so helpful. I mean, every time I talk to you, I feel like I can remember one more pillar, you know, like, so I, and I learned about GWPs today. So that was super, super helpful. I'm sure people are going to get a ton of value from the session today. Thank you so much. Yep.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you both. This has been phenomenal. I think Mindful Materials has, you know, our network has been growing, but it's been always the folks who are sustainability first. And I'm so excited to, you know, for us to have this partnership with Ace Lab and with Point to Point and really reach new audiences who, you know, sustainability is kind of, I said the Wild West before. There's a lot, it's complex. And we want to show folks that the water's warm. Everybody can jump in. We want to get more folks on board, and we're really excited for our partnerships to reach those new audiences. So thank you both for your support and for your partnership at the happy hour as well, but also through, you know, getting the word out through your podcast and all of this. So really grateful to you both.
Cool.
It's easy to get behind. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks everybody for tuning in to this episode of Inside the Spec, and be sure to tune in for our next episode coming out soon.